Our kids need to move. We know that. Many children don't get enough exercise, and that causes a lot of health problems. But it also turns out that physical activity can be an incredible tool when it comes to teaching. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, movement and learning. Getting a classroom full of kids to sit quietly and listen can be incredibly challenging. New research indicates that if we want kids to learn, sitting quietly may actually be counterproductive. We'll find out about the latest research on how physical activity can help kids learn. We'll also look at what we already know about how exercise affects our brains. And I'll talk with two teachers who use movement techniques in the classroom. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Over the last couple of decades, schools have truncated recess and reduced the number of hours students spend in PE in order to maximize instructional time. Now we're learning a lot about a strong connection between movement and learning, so some schools are integrating movement across the curriculum. This hour, we'll talk about movement and learning. I'll talk with a classroom teacher in Ames and one in Coralville. They both use movement in the classroom, but in different ways. We also want to hear from you. How have you seen movement and exercise affect your child's learning? You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. The first thing we're going to do today is find out what the latest research says about movement and learning. Constance Beecher is here. She's an assistant professor in the School of Education at Iowa State University, and she's made a study of the connection between movement and learning for many years. Hello, Constance.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
And Spiridula Vasu is an assistant professor in the Department of Kinesiology at Iowa State University. She just released a new study that demonstrates that just 10 minutes of physical activity can improve kids' learning. She's also been studying this connection for many years and directs a program called Move for Thought, distributed through the Iowa Department of Education. Hello, Spiridula.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you for having me.
And let's talk about this most recent study, because the most significant part of this study is that 10 minutes of physical activity can influence a child's learning. Can you tell me exactly what kind of movement and what kind of environment you studied movement in?
Yes. So we found that just 10 minutes of physical activity that needs to have some specific characteristics like moderate intensity, but also have a lot of coordination and motor complexity, as well as integrating physical activity with the academics, so has a lot of cognitive engagement, was sufficient to help students benefit from it and improve on their executive function, which is very important for learning and for school success. When we say executive function, we mean self-control, working memory, as well as being able to switch from one task to the other. So all of those components are very important for school success.
Well, and you mentioned coordinated activity. We're not just talking about aerobic activity. This is not running in place. What do you mean? Can you maybe give me a real-world example of how this would work in the classroom?
Correct. So we're not just talking about running around the classroom. We're talking about doing things that like crab walking or bear walking or even just jump rope, which requires coordination and it has some complexity and it's not a very simple repetitive move.
Okay. And in the past, you've found and others have found that 20 minutes of exercise could impact learning, but these findings suggest that a smaller amount of time, just 10 minutes, can make an impact.
Yes. A recent meta-analysis that was published, I mean, all taking collectively all the studies that have been done, they suggest that 20 minutes is the minimum for in order to see benefits on executive functions. And we found that just 10 minutes is enough. And I believe it has to do with the combination of all those characteristics.
All right. So you mentioned the coordinated behavior. So I've got my kids in my classroom crab walking around the classroom. You're also integrating some sort of academic lesson into that activity, right?
Correct.
So how?
Well, I use a lot of flashcards so the kids can skip around or crab walk around the room and they can get a flashcard with a problem. It could be a math problem, it could be a definition of a concept, and the kids provide the answer and move around and go and get another one. So at the same time as they move, they think and they find answers to specific problems related to the concepts that the teacher is teaching.
Now, I can imagine a teacher or a parent hearing this might think, that sounds loud, that sounds disorganized, and it sounds time-consuming. What is the payoff? How much of a payoff is there?
Well, the benefits are huge, and it's not time-consuming because you don't have a break from the academics. The students at the same time are doing what they're supposed to do. Instead of just being seated, they move around. And the benefit afterwards is huge because the students are more alert and they absorb the information much better. So they show better working memory, self-control. And as part of management, it's up to the teacher, you know, to keep the students accountable. And if you use more movement in the classroom, the students are going to be used to it and they will behave. But if you do it only once a year, of course they will be so excited. Exactly. Right. So excited that you won't be able to control them.
So you said you see a definite improvement in the retention of the information that they learn while they're moving around. Can you quantify that for us? How much better?
Well, it depends on, I'm not sure if I can quantify it, but the effect that we see is moderate. Even just with 10 minutes, it depends on what the teacher is doing. I think, you know, the more cognitive engagement, the more activity they add into that, the better the benefits are going to be.
All right. So you see a significant improvement.
Definitely significant improvement. And the effect sizes are big enough that show that there is a significant improvement.
All right. And it sounds like fun, too.
Absolutely. And in our study, we found that the kids loved it and they enjoyed the movement, all of them, compared to, you know, just being sitting and doing the math practice.
Well, this hour, I want to talk with both of you about the amount of research that has been done over many decades now about the connection between movement and learning. And Constance, this finding from Spiridula, this is right in line with a lot of the studies that have been coming out in recent years, right?
Correct. Yeah, absolutely.
And we know, of course, by watching children that passively sitting and listening is difficult. That's something that we have to work on with kids. We've also known for a long time, I know that teachers see this every day in classrooms, that interaction, just asking a question and getting a verbal response or having the kids raise their hands, all of these things increases the amount of attention that, that kids can pay to something. How much more does physical activity enhance that?
You know, I don't know if that's something that you could quantify, how much more. It's definitely the way that, you know, the way that people have sort of evolved to learn is, you know, by watching and doing. And so sitting and listening or having somebody tell you information isn't really going to stick with you unless you're able to do something with it. And so, you know, we're always thinking about for children to really be learning, they need to be actively engaged and in a variety of manners, I would say. So verbally responding, doing something physically, showing.
What do we know about what goes on in our brains when we engage our body as well as our mind?
Well, you know, there's several things that are happening. It's kind of difficult to answer because we can't really, you know, hook up a brain scanner to somebody while they're moving around. That doesn't really work. But we do know that we get an increase in blood circulation, for example. And that's just going to, the brain is really heavily dependent on the circulatory system. And so that is improving brain functioning. We've seen things like sustained aerobic activity increases memory. It increases because of we actually have seen an increase of cells in the hippocampus, which is responsible for short-term memory. And I think the other thing is that the parts of our brain that are responsible for motor coordination, you know, are also lending, they also help with learning tasks in the sense that learning tasks are sequential and have a sequence and have an order. And so for our cerebellum, which coordinates motor activity and kind of basically anything that we do that has an order, the cerebellum is involved in that. And so if we are activating that while we're doing learning, I think that's anytime we can get that multimodal, that's helpful.
In recent years, there has been a lot of focus on using movement, and we'll talk about wobbly chairs in a little while. That's one of the ways that the movement has been introduced, particularly with kids with special needs or kids who are attention deficit hyperactivity. Does when you look at the research that shows that different movement techniques are effective with kids with special needs, does that make you question why are we only using these techniques with kids with special needs?
Oh, absolutely. My background is in special education. And so one of the things I always say is that, you know, you can use these techniques with anyone. Good teaching is good teaching. So the things that we do to help kids with special needs, help their attention and to help them with their processing, those are techniques that work with all kids.
And I mentioned that recess has gotten shorter, which frustrates a lot of people. And of course, physical activity and fitness have a very important connection that has gotten a lot of attention in recent years, especially with our obesity epidemic. But from your research, Spiridula, does recess, does that playtime, that kind of physical movement, does that also affect learning?
Yes, of course. And that's why it's so important the schools to retain all the opportunities for children to be physically active throughout the school day, not only in PE, but in recess and as many opportunities as they can have in the classroom before in the morning. So it's very, very important to be active throughout the school day.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. I'm talking with Spiridula Vasu. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Kinesiology at Iowa State University. She just released a new study that demonstrates that just 10 minutes of physical activity can improve kids' learning when the learning is integrated into that activity. Constance Beecher is also here. She's an assistant professor in the School of Education at Iowa State University. We'll talk with a couple of classroom teachers in a few minutes as well, and we'd love to hear from you. How have you used movement to help your child learn? What questions do you have about how it's used in schools? Give us a call, 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the connection and the many connections between movement and learning. We're talking about new research that shows that children can benefit from just 10 minutes of physical activity with learning incorporated into it. Spiridula Vasu is the author of the recent study that showed that. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Kinesiology at Iowa State University. This has long been an area of interest for her as well. She also directs a program called Move for Thought, distributed through the Iowa Department of Education. Constance Beecher is here. She's an assistant professor in the School of Education at Iowa State University. We'll talk to a couple of classroom teachers who use movement in different ways in their classrooms in just a few minutes. We also want to hear from you. How have you used movement to help your child learn? Do you have questions about how movement is used in the classroom? Concerns about a lack of movement in your child's classroom? Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Constance, just before the break, we were talking about using movement to help children with special needs learn, and how when you see that used for children with special needs, you wonder why it can't be more broadly used across the curriculum with kids who don't have special needs. But I'm curious, there's been a lot of talk over the years about different learning styles, people with different learning styles. Are there some people who respond better to this than others?
You know, I would say it's more about learning preferences, probably. The way the major structures of the brain that process information are the same for everyone. Those are like highways. And so everyone sort of has those same highways. What's different is all of the little side streets and dirt roads. And those are everyone's individual experiences creates different sorts of brain connections. And so all children bring that into the classroom with them, their background and their experience. For really everyone, studies have pretty much shown that having more than one mode of presenting information is helpful. So it's always, you're always going to get more out of something when it's presented visually and auditorily, for example, or you're getting it auditorily and you get to move. And certainly people have preferences in things that they, the way that they like to get information. And then when we're talking about some of our kids who have difficulty focusing, physical activity, because of the way that their nervous system is sort of wired, if you will, helps just get them be able to focus in a better way, if that makes sense.
Interesting. And you found, Spiridula, in your most recent study that there were some students who seemed to benefit even more from this activity than other students. You found that overweight kids had an even better response. Can you explain that?
Yes, that's correct. We found that overweight children, while they were sitting for that period of time, we saw a small decrease on their executive function. But with physical activity, they benefited even more, and they were able to do as well as the normal weight kids.
Interesting. And why do you think that is?
Well, this is something new, so really we cannot say about the mechanisms, but we can speculate a little bit. And it might have to do with the circulation, with the blood flow. So maybe overweight kids need more physical activity to have a better blood flow.
Interesting. And the research over the years, we were talking about recess and how that helps and PE helps. But what do we know about what exercise does for our ability to learn, Constance?
Well, I think it's some of the things that Dr. Vazou was talking about. It's, you know, it helps us focus. It helps that executive center, which is how we control and direct our attention. It helps with short-term memory, which is all that information that we're getting. We have to hold it in our short-term memory, and we have to do something with it in order to get it to go into long-term memory. And that's really what the learning is. And it's also the last thing that we haven't talked about is it's motivating, you know. And so for people to really learn things, it has to be emotionally relevant for them. And that, you know, children enjoy movement. We're meant to move. That's how we were built.
So if they're feeling happy, if they're having a good time, they're more likely to remember.
Absolutely.
And we have an email that seems to reinforce that point. This is from Nathan. He says, my daughter is 2.5 years old and watches Sesame Street. If they show a video about counting to 10, she watches. If they sing a song about counting to 10, however, she's up, dancing, counting, and interaction. I don't know that one way is better than the other, but I know which one she prefers.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's doing those two things at once, you know, hearing it and singing it and moving your body.
I have an email from a teacher who uses movement in his classroom. He is a Spanish teacher at Stowe Elementary School in Des Moines. And he says, I firmly believe in incorporating movement into elementary classrooms. Here are a few ways I do it. I have students vote with their bodies. Choice A goes to this side of the room. Choice B goes to that side of the room. I have students move their bodies to the sounds and rhythms of music of the Spanish-speaking world, not necessarily dance, but he also requires students to respond physically to commands in Spanish. For example, stand, sit, walk, stop, run, give me, touch, show me, etc. And you've also looked at research that shows that this kind of movement is really useful in teaching English as a second language. So I can imagine there are a lot of things in teaching different languages where you could use movement. Constance?
Yeah, you know, as I said before, anytime you can do more than one mode, that's going to be really helpful. And so when we have kids who come to us and the English is not their first language, you know, we always want teachers to be using more visuals and adding in that extra information when they can to make things more clear.
We have this email from Heather that leads us into talking to one of our classroom teachers. She says, in elementary school, my son needed more physical movement, so the teachers incorporated that in his learning plan, sitting at work on an exercise ball or on a wiggly chair or in a beanbag that shifts and takes small muscle movement to sit there. And we were talking about incorporating these kinds of things beyond kids with special needs, and that's something that they're doing at Edwards Elementary School in Ames. And Terry Boating Lincoln is a second grade teacher at Edwards Elementary in Ames. Hello, Terry.
Hi there. Hi, Miss Charity. How are you?
Well, thank you so much for being here today. I'm having a great day. And
Good. You,
as a school, decided to use wobbly chairs in your classrooms. And for people who don't know, what is a wobbly chair?
Well, it's kind of like a stool. It has like almost like a barbell look to it, where the bottom is wider and then there's a smaller column in the middle and then the top is wider again. And the bottom part is slightly domed, so when the kids sit on the top, they can rock back and forth. It wiggles.
Okay. And now these are not at every desk.
No, ma'am. We have regular classroom chairs that they can't tip in, which is kind of a new feature for our new furniture. And they come to our back teacher table, and they have the wiggly chairs. So we have about 7 or 8 of those wiggly chairs per classroom. So they don't use it all the time. But like the doctor was saying, it's a change of scenery, a change of pace.
All right. And you were on the committee that chose these chairs last year. Why?
Well, you know, they brought it in as an option for a new trend that they had seen the research on, that students learn better if they don't have to sit still, some learners. And the teachers were excited about it. When the committees came in and they showed us the furniture, that it looked funny, so that was kind of appealing. And we sat in them, and we actually requested and that we have those for our teachers, too. So we had the students that were already going to get them, and the teachers said, myself included, we'd like to have those, too, because we sit at our teacher table and the students come to us. So that's a long time sitting in the same spot. So we wanted them too. So we sit and rock and those kind of things too.
So this is the first year you've used them in your classroom. What kind of an effect do you see?
You know, there's a lot of different ways we use them. First of all, the kids enjoy them, and when they want to sit in them, then they want to come to the teacher table. That makes it more appealing. So just first reason would just be the kids want to get back there to use them. Second reason would be, again, a change of scenery. If they're sitting at a desk or sitting on the floor, then this is something different that they can sit in. And the kids need to be constantly moving again. Second graders, 7 and 8 year olds, they have very short attention spans. So if we have them for 7 or 8 minutes and they're focused on a chair, then we move them to the wiggle chairs and we get them for another 7 or 8 minutes. And then we take them to the floor and then we get them for another 7 or 8 minutes. So it gives us those small spurts of time where the kids can focus instead of just sitting. Another reason would be the students that simply cannot sit still, which we're seeing more and more these days. We don't require them to. They don't have to. So it isn't a matter of hold still, sit still, stand still. It's wiggle. It's okay. As long as they're centrally located where they can still receive my instruction, still see the supplies I put in front of them, the math manipulatives or the reading material, they can still have access to that. But the whole time, their bottom halves are going back and forth and rocking back and forth. So it appeals to both teacher and student. They can wiggle and they can still sit with me.
And I'm sure some people probably think, isn't that distracting in the classroom? So is it? Yeah. Is it distracting?
We had the same concern. You know, if they tip over, and some of them are just, especially at the beginning of the year, they weren't sure what to do with them, and they would test the boundaries, of course, as kids would do and adults too, and they would tip them over. So we learned that if you flip them completely over, then they sit on the flat part, and it doesn't rock anymore. So they just know if they happen to tip it over, I don't have to even say anything. They just know to get up and flip it over, and then they sit more steady. So it isn't a problem, and we don't have the kids have injuries or anything like that. And the stools are catered to the child's age. Like the kindergarten and first grade levels are shorter, and then the upper grades are higher, and the teacher chairs are even higher based on the height of the individual.
So it sounds like it's been a lot of fun, and the kids enjoy it. Do you see an effect on their ability to learn?
You know, I think I do. I think that I see my students that would normally be standing and walking in circles and pacing back and forth because they just can't sit still are with me. They can still move their lower half while they're with me on the top half. And that's where the brains are, so that's what we want. So I think that I do see definitely a difference on the ones that can't sit still. And the ones that can, they just do. They can sit on these blue stools and not wiggle, too. You can hold them still. So I just find that it meets the needs of lots of different learners, and we have a huge variety in our classrooms.
How has having one of these chairs affected you?
Well, me personally,
yeah.
You know, I can only sit on that situation, that stool, for about 3 rotations, which would be about 45, 50 minutes, and then I bring in a regular chair. So I don't know if it's my older bones, I'm almost 40, or what, but just having my knees bent like that affects me, but I like that I can change it up again. It isn't just the same solitary cushion, and, you know, it just keeps your core solid, which everybody needs to have more of a solid core, so that's pretty positive.
All right. Well, Terry, thank you so much for sharing your experiences with us today. And actually, before I let you go, you sound very positive about these chairs. How about your other teachers at the school? Are there some teachers that don't like them?
Oh, sure. I mean, you have some students in classrooms that just can't handle it. And that's always frustrating when they have the temptation that normally, maybe not normally, but in the past wouldn't have been there. So sure, you have some students that don't do well with them, but those are few and far between. I think in general, the teachers are excited about them. And I know that when our principal posted pictures of our new furniture last year, before we even moved into our new building, that was the biggest rage, was these cool chairs that we were going to get. And then when they didn't come in until like the first month of school had passed, we were itching to get our hands on them. So then when these cool chairs came in, then it's been just a real exciting thing for us, something different.
All right. Terrific. Terry, thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, I appreciate the call. Thank you.
Terry Boding Lincoln is a second grade teacher at Edwards Elementary School in Ames. We're talking about movement and learning this hour. Also with me, Spiridula Vasu, an assistant professor in the Department of Kinesiology at Iowa State University, and Constance Beecher, an assistant professor in the School of Education at Iowa State University. And hearing Terry talk about those chairs in the classroom, what's your response, Constance?
I actually have seen those chairs, so I really like them. I took my students to Edwards Elementary last semester to work with some of the kids, and I commented on those chairs right away. I said, oh my gosh, you guys, what a good idea. You know, this is great because those kids that need to move, you don't have to censor them. They can just move when they want, and even the college students enjoyed them, I have to say.
Well, and Spiridula, do you want to respond too?
Well, yeah, I don't have that chair, but I do have a stability ball, and I use stability balls with my college students as well, and they enjoy sitting and using the core a little bit while at the same time they're engaged.
Well, and I started that segment with an email from Heather about her son having one of those chairs when he was in elementary school. She goes on to say that her son went to public junior high school and was horrified at no breaks other than running from one class period to the next. He's exhausted when his school day ends, and she thinks it's because he has to use so much energy just to sit still. So we're incorporating a lot of movement into elementary schools, or at least some schools are. Is this something that we haven't caught on to for older students yet, Constance?
Oh my gosh, yes. So the thing that gets complicated about middle school and high school is the schedules. is just all of those kids and all of those classes that they have to get to. And it's really, you know, from the school's perspective, I have to say it's really complicated trying to figure out how you're going to get all of these kids to where they're supposed to be in all the subjects that they have to take. You know, schools are bound by what the state of Department of Education says they have to do. So it is really challenging. We have it's a really big area of concern for especially our vulnerable kids to have to transition from the environment in elementary school where they get more breaks and there's more movement to this environment where suddenly there isn't any. I think you have some individual teachers who try to accommodate kids, but as a whole, the system in junior high and high school doesn't really, it's not the most flexible, should we say.
And Spirit Dealer, we're coming up on a break. Briefly, do you want to respond to that too?
Well, I feel that it's also the fear that for older kids it's not cool. So it might have to do with that, but it's definitely something that should be incorporated as long as the moves are appropriate for their age.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. We're talking about movement and learning today. In just a moment, we'll talk with a classroom teacher in Coralville who's using movement in some new innovative ways in her classroom. And here with me, Spiridula Vasu, assistant professor in the Department of Kinesiology at Iowa State University, and Constance Beecher, an assistant professor in the School of Education at Iowa State. And you're welcome to join the conversation as well with your questions, with your experiences. If you have a child who had a hard time learning while sitting still, what are some of the ways that your child's teachers have accommodated that? How have you accommodated that? 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about movement and learning, what we know about how different kinds of movement impact different kinds of learning in students. And with me, Constance Beecher. She's an assistant professor in the School of Education at Iowa State University. Spiridula Vasu is here. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Kinesiology at Iowa State University. And also, we want to welcome another classroom teacher to the show. Renee Pearson is a first grade teacher at Kirkwood Elementary School in Iowa City. Hello, Renee.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today. And you just recently got a grant from the U.S. Department of Education, their PEP grant, Physical Education Program grant, and you're implementing different kinds of movement into your classroom associated with spelling and reading. Can you explain what you're doing?
Yeah, so we are in year two of our PEP grant. It's a three-year grant program for us. And last year, there was a lot of planning that went into play to get kind of training set up and teachers set up with different strategies that they could use in their classrooms. And then this year, we were really asked to implement that training into our classroom in our everyday teaching. And so I'm a grad student right now at Graceland University and am doing my action research project on physical education in the classroom and action-based learning specifically. And so with my study, I am doing work with spelling and word acquisition and phonics learning within that in my classroom. And the education that I'm putting into place is all physical, active-based learning, things to do with spelling. So
give me an example of a lesson.
Sure, yeah. So we, every day, and research shows that about 10 minutes is all that you really should do in, like, really good, you know, phonics and spelling instruction a day, because just for attention spans and kids learning best. And so for about 10 minutes every day during our reading time, we implement different physical activities to learn our spelling and phonics rules. So today, for example, we did a hopscotch activity where part of our PEP grant, we were able to buy like hopscotch squares that we can put together in various ways. And I wrote letters on them, spelling out some of our spelling words this week. And the kids hopped each of the letters, say the letter sound as they go. And then they, when they end, they read the whole word. And they just kind of go around a cycle around the classroom and do that. And so that was actually, that activity was featured in the Press Citizen last week, I believe, 2 weeks ago, regarding our PEP grant. So that was kind of one of their favorite go-tos. But other things might be very, very simple, just getting the kids up and out of their seats, moving to different corners of their room and reading the words, doing some cross-lateral movement, just various different activities that are pretty simple to implement, but get kids up and out of their seats.
And you have been, because of course you're doing this for a research project too, you've been very closely looking at the results of this kind
sure.
of movement. Can you tell
yeah.
us what you've seen?
Yeah, so I'm in week 4 right now of my implementation. It's a 6-week study. And so my first week was a baseline week, and so I just did our instruction as written in our curriculum. So it didn't include getting up and moving. It just kind of included the basics of sitting in your seat, kind of getting that information in. And so that week I saw about a 10% increase. And actually, it was under 10%. I think it was maybe 7%.
Okay.
Increase in pre to post assessment.
Which
results.
Is, and of course, that's the traditional way that we've taught spelling
yep,
in classrooms.
Absolutely.
So
yep.
that's
so
pretty
just,
typical.
And nothing problem. Wrong with it. Just kind of
right.
sitting in your seat, getting it as it's given to you.
Okay.
So then in the weeks after, I've seen at least a 25% increase from pre to post assessment results every week.
Wow.
And so it's really cool. I mean, and obviously there's many factors that go into that. And so you can't say for certain, you know, I mean, it's research, so it's, you're not saying with certainty, but you, I mean, I can say that with a certain amount of confidence that the action in the classroom really has increased the cognition in my kids.
So you mentioned the amount of time that you spend on spelling or sight words. Have you increased the amount of time that you're spelling, or is it the same as
nope.
it was before?
Nope, it's the same as it was before. It's just kind of replacing the activities. And it's not even necessarily replacing, it's just adding to the activities and enhancing those activities. And so, nope, it's not really adding anything extra. It is just extra, you know, extra planning on my part as far as figuring out if I need extra materials or if I need extra things. But once the routines are in place for the kids, it's really quite easy to put those things into place every day.
Are there other teachers that are getting excited about this too in the school?
Yeah, actually, yeah. My PE teacher, who was kind of the lead on this PEP grant that we were able to receive, he's been implementing some things in his PE setting with first grade for the spelling words and our sight words, our words to know within his PE curriculum, which has been fun to kind of do some cross-curricular work with that.
Interesting.
And then we all have access to Jean Blades is kind of the action research guru person. She has a book called Thinking on Your Feet, and each of our grade level teams has that book. And it's just a book with over 200 activities that get kids up and moving in the classroom that are easy to implement across different settings. So in reading and math and science and lots of different areas. So
you mentioned that you have to make sure that you've planned well.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
What are the challenges to this?
I mean, obviously, when you're getting kids up and moving, there's behaviors that come with that. And so a lot of it is just really setting up that classroom expectation of, you know, that this is an activity that we're doing. It isn't, so it doesn't get out of hand. So I think that it's very important to have a culture in your classroom that is set up to kind of welcome kids to get up and move, but within a certain bounds. Obviously, we want them to be safe, and we want them to be, you know, kind of respectful to each other. And so just that planning ahead of time to make sure that I know what we're doing, the kids know what's expected, they know the outcomes of why we're doing what we're doing. So, yeah, it's just kind of creating that classroom of safety and that expectation.
Well, Renee, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us today.
Sure, absolutely.
And let us know when you've completed your research project as well.
Yes, I will. It will be fun. So.
All right.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot. Renee Pearson is a first grade teacher at Kirkwood Elementary School in Coralville. And again, Constance and Spiridula, I'd love to hear your responses to listening to Renee and what she's been doing in her classroom.
Well, we also did a study at schools for 8 weeks. We implemented the Move for Thought activities with teachers, and we had a control group. We had a classroom that didn't do the Move for Thought activities, and we found significant differences after 8 weeks of implementation of the integrated physical activities. Everybody improved, as expected, but the improvement on the intervention classes was much, much larger compared to the control. And that study is under review now for publication.
Fascinating. And We have a lot of questions from people who are listening, and this returns to a subject that we talked about briefly earlier. This is from Katie. She says, my son's school has gym 5 times a week for second graders, but the recess time is dramatically shorter than I remember as a kid. 20 minutes a day with regular indoor recess where physical activity is much reduced. Do both types of activities, free play outdoors and structured activity indoors, have the same value? And this is, of course, where we're not integrating learning into the activity.
Well, play has a huge value. We need to let the kids also have the unstructured play because they learn different things like socialization and interacting with their peers without the adult supervision and problem solving. So we definitely should not replace recess and free play with only structured physical activity.
Okay, Constance, do you want to add anything to that?
Yes, I would agree. When we look at... So when we're working with kids who are developing language, for example, we find that kids talk more to each other when adults are not present. And there does need to, you know, play is a time for them to be solving problems, to be working out social relationships. So we need to have that play time. And then, you know, the more structured activities can be incorporated into the learning, I think.
You know, a lot of people are concerned about making sure there's as much instructional time as possible. Would you advocate a longer school day if it allowed more time for play?
I don't know if I want to answer that question.
All right. Well, we're talking about movement and learning this hour with me, Constance Beecher, assistant professor in the School of Education at Iowa State University, and Spiridula Vasu, assistant professor in the Department of Kinesiology at Iowa State University. You're welcome to join the conversation, 866-780-9100. Diane is on the phone in Iowa City. Hi, Diane.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I just wanted to add to the conversation, when I was a young mother in Washington, D.C., and sort of interrupted my working life, well, a different path. I had been a dancer, and so and also had been reared by a clinical psychologist, and I taught movement to very preschoolers, and, you know, with instruments and toy and lots of play and physical activities and imitating animals in nature or a lot of different things. And the children absolutely loved it, but what I hadn't anticipated was that the parents began to say to me after about 2 or 3 months in the different schools that I would go to, that children who had been very reserved or withdrawn, the parents noticed that they were far more verbal. They were also, you know, they were far more expressive than they had been. And then the second point that was really a surprise to me and delightfully is that if the children first started doing this and they were already 4.5 or 5, I found that boys, they weren't always willing to do some of the things that were sort of girly, like being a silk scarf or something. And then the girls were somewhat reluctant to do certain activities. But if I started with the children when they were 2, they hadn't already begun to have these gender distinctions and ideas about what was appropriate and not appropriate to do. And this was something that the teachers and the with the preschoolers had identified, that once we started doing the movement classes, that it seemed to help children not, you know, fall in these strict gender roles. And it may be a little much to say it was all because of the movement, but it did really make this distinction. So there were the 2 things, the children who were shy or withdrawn, you know, really blossomed, and it really sparked their creativity. So I just wanted to offer those 2 things. And for me, it was the most fun I ever had working.
Oh, that's great. Diane, thank you so much for sharing that. And we also have an email from another teacher. She says, this is Chris. As a now retired music teacher, I will add that I cannot imagine teaching music without movement. I had students K through 12 on their feet, moving with the music every chance I could get. The beat and the rhythms are then built into their bodies, fast-tracking the process of learning the music. In addition, the wiggles get worked out in a natural and fun way. Spiridula and Constance, do you hear from teachers who say, well, yeah, teachers have been noticing this forever?
Yes, that's true.
I mean, the teachers who enjoy that type of thing, for sure.
All right. This is an email from Brian. He says, I work at a center that works with adults that often have difficulties learning due to attention disorders, issues with short-term memory, and other problems that make paying attention in classes difficult. Have there been any studies showing that movement with adults can help with attention spans and learning? Constance?
You know, there have been some studies with, for example, adult men in prison when they were doing the 30 minutes of aerobic activity. They did show improved memory functioning. So I think that sort of sustained aerobic activity in concert with some of the like coordinated activities that Dr. Razu is talking about, you know, with adults, their brains are a little bit less plastic than children, so it might take more effort and more practice, but you would still see the same effects.
And Spiridula, do you want to add to that?
Yes, and we also have research findings from the work environment. So adding a small break, activity break, you see a more productivity in the work environment. So there are some findings there that also agree with what we just said.
Do the two of you, do you advise your college students to incorporate exercise or movement into their learning, Constance?
Absolutely. I say to my students, put that cup of coffee down and go get some exercise before you come to class. I tell them that almost the first week of class, the only thing you can do to improve your brain is exercise.
Spiridula?
Yeah, I teach elementary teachers, and we do include a lot of activity breaks, but also integrated physical activities. Sometimes I have a quiz, and I have the questions in a little sheet that they have to go around the room and pick up one and write the answer, and then at the end I collect all the answers from the quiz. So we do what we preach.
And saying the only thing you can do to improve your brain is exercise, that's an incredibly powerful statement, Constance.
Well, what I mean is the actually changing of sort of structures in the brain exercise is one of the things that is definitely going to help with that.
So the more reading you do, the more research you do, how does that impact how you live your life?
Well, I actually incorporate daily exercise into my life. And sometimes, don't tell my students this, but sometimes I grade papers while I'm walking on the treadmill.
How about you, Spiridula?
Oh, yeah. Well, throughout my day, I have a jump rope. Sometimes, you know, people walk by and they can see me use my jump rope. In my office, I sit on a stability ball. But also through my teaching, we do a lot of movement with my students, and they appreciate that and they value that. And then when they go to the school to student teach, they implement those breaks and they see the instant gratitude from the students, and that's the most rewarding part.
So there have been so many studies released over the past few years with similar themes to your most recent study, Spiridula, and so many studies that have come out. Is this a movement that is really catching on? Do the two of you feel like this is something that has a lot of momentum that we're going to see implemented in schools all over the place?
I see, yes. I think teachers are more receptive because the more we see all those findings, they try new things. So I think the timing is good. I also want to say that we don't have to extend the school day, because even taking time out of the classroom, of the teaching, the students learn. So it doesn't need to be longer.
All right. Thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Spiridula Vasu is an assistant professor in the Department of Kinesiology at Iowa State University. Constance Beecher is an assistant professor in the School of Education at Iowa State University. We've been talking about movement and learning this hour. Talk of Iowa is produced by Claire Roth, Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Julia Davis. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.